Welcome to Meet the People of MCB with Chip Haley and Kay Malmquist, sponsored by the Missouri Council of the Blind. Let's get to it with this week's interview. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Meet the People of MCB. I'm Chip Haley.
And I'm Kay Malmquist.
Kay, I'm looking forward to today's interview, and I'll explain why. Because I know a lot of our listeners probably really don't know today's guest. They're going to get that opportunity, and they're going to be able to match the voice with the work that she's done for us.
Yep. I think you guys are in for a real treat, because this is somebody that just started with us, and you will learn more.
You bet. So I'm going to bring on at this time our guest for this week's edition of Meet the People of MCB, Annette Carter. Welcome, Annette, to Meet the People.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
We're glad to have you. Annette, one of the things that we like to do is start off talking about the individual's vision loss. And just by the way of introduction, ladies and gentlemen, Annette Carter is our current webmaster, and what an extraordinary job that she's been doing for us. We're really happy and pleased with all the work that she's done. But Annette, if you would like to start off and just share with us a little bit about your vision loss.
Okay, well, people sometimes ask, were you born blind or did you become blind? And I say yes, because I was born blind with the two major conditions I had and still have is severe astigmatism and severe myopia. So the myopia, as you know, you have to look real close, and the astigmatism makes the cornea kind of wavy, so everything blurs in and out. My parents didn't know right away. I guess I got lost in the shuffle of all the kids. And then when they realized, went to an ophthalmologist and got the glasses, the thick, what they call Coke bottle glasses. They weren't really good enough. I didn't see what my siblings saw, but that's what they had. And so at age 10, I got contact lenses to help with clear up the vision. So the hard lenses kind of smoothed out that cornea, and I saw pretty good. I still couldn't see what my siblings saw, but it was better than the glasses, which they were so thick that it was hard to walk. You know, can't like look down and see the ground, everything, you'll fall. It makes you real dizzy. So I wore the contacts from age 10 to age 19. An ophthalmologist butchered up both corneas. He fit me with contact lenses that were too tight, and I kept going back saying they hurt. And he said, no, you don't know what you're talking about. They're supposed to rock on, the ones you came in with rocked on your cornea when you blinked, which they're supposed to float on your eye. They're not supposed to grip your eye. So I persevered my way into Wills Eye Hospital in Philadelphia, and the head director happily was a specialist in contacts and also retinas, which was one of my major problems. And he said the lenses you have been wearing gave you mutilation, ulcerations, and I'm trying to think of the third, laceration. And he said, don't you put those in again. And I had to wait for my eyes to actually heal to try lenses again. And because he said, you know that the glasses aren't an option now. So we waited the period, and then I still couldn't wear what he prescribed. He assured me they were the correct fit, but I became permanently sensitized to the lenses. So I then tried gas permeable, semi-soft. I was left with the option of soft lenses, which was okay. It was better than nothing, but with the astigmatism being so severe, everything blurred in and out. So I wore those for a good period of my life. So of course, with that correction, even though I couldn't see everything that others saw, I was not considered blind. So that's where I was born blind, but then I, quote, wasn't blind. And then in 1997, I was just having progressively more pain on my eyes, and I was at the point where I said, I can't put pain in my eyes one more day, you know, meaning putting the contacts in. I have to do something. And so one last ditch effort, I went to an ophthalmologist to see, you know, what's this LASIK surgery about? Is that an option for me? And he almost laughed me out of the office saying, you must know the curvature of your eye is too steep, blah, blah, blah. So I left there disheartened for about a minute and then just said, wait a minute, what do I do? And that was just ringing in my head, what do I do? Okay, I was born blind. I know how to be blind in my home. I just don't know what to do outside my home, to continue working, to do everything else outside of my home. And I was living in the sighted world. I really didn't know much about the blind world since I had correction most of my life. So I was pleased to know that there were two schools for the blind in Denver. And I toured both of them and ran back to the first one. And I did make the correct choice. And they interviewed and they said, what would you like to learn? And I said, everything. I haven't lived half my life. I was about 43 at the time. So I said, you know, give me everything that you have. So they said, okay, it'll be about 18 months to go through all of these classes, you know, Braille, mobility, all of that stuff. And at 6 months, they said, we have nothing more to teach you. We need a space for someone else. So that's what I mean by I was born blind, but then became sighted and then became blind. So that's it in a nutshell.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. Appreciate it. You mentioned your siblings and your parents. Now, are your parents still living?
No, I lost both of them about 13 months apart from each other. They were on the East Coast. My siblings, I was one of seven. I'm right in the middle. The first were twin girls, and one passed. They were almost 3 months premature, and so we lost one sister. And then a year later, my brother, 11 months later, me, 1 year, and a month later, my other brother. So I'm sandwiched in between the two boys. And then 6 months later, another set of twin girls. So wow. Out of the five girls, I'm the only girl that's not a twin.
Oh, okay. All right. I should have asked you this before we got to your family there, but so is your eye condition, is it considered hereditary?
No, because we don't see any history of anybody else, although my brother that's 11 months older does have similar vision, or we were born with similar vision, extreme astigmatism and extreme myopia, but he's still living in the sighted world. He's wearing at least one lens right now, and it's the hard lens, so it corrects the astigmatism. And so I'm the only one that doesn't have that correction anymore.
Okay. And now you were talking about when you had gone to the ophthalmologist back east. Were you originally from the eastern part of the country?
Yes, I was. I was born in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and in 68, my family moved to South Jersey, which was the suburbs of Philadelphia. So when I grew, I could just drive across the bridge to work in Philadelphia. And then in 91, my husband and daughter and I moved to the Denver area. And then in 2000, I moved to California, where I live now.
Okay. And you mentioned before we started the recording, you're around the Fresno area, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Little town called Clovis, right.
Okay. And talking about your husband, your daughter, or your daughter still live nearby?
My daughter lives closer to you, Chip and Kay.
Okay.
She and her husband and my two granddaughters live in Lee's Summit, Missouri.
I know exactly where that is. And I tell you, Lee's Summit has grown to be one of the largest cities in Missouri. It is huge. It really is. It's not far from Kansas City. It's on the western side of the state. But it is really become a large community. But that's interesting. I'm going to turn it over to Kay. Kay, I know you would like to ask your questions.
Yep. Well, I guess we talked about, you're growing up with your eye conditions and things like that. Did you have any problems when you were in school with, interacting with kids or doing things or anything like that? Did you find that your eye condition, blindness, whatever you want to call it, interfered with that?
Because I had fair correction, it wasn't strikingly my problem. I did think I was not observant, since my family didn't understand. There was a problem there. I just thought I wasn't observant, and now I know different. But in school, when I had the correction, I kind of made do. It was in older school, in college years, that then I knew I was blind.
I functioned blind.
I had my tools. So I use my tools that I learned, CCTV, audio, all of those things that I had, put in my toolbox. But there still was a struggle because the second college where I took some biblical courses, they did not understand accessibility. The psychology class, the teacher just didn't understand. One of the required elements, we had to go to the library and use a certain program that was not accessible. So I knew how to make things accessible. So I made the suggestions and he just wasn't receptive. It was so bad that I started an accessibility program in there and I still didn't get help. So it was a big barrier. So I wasn't able to finish that psychology course for that one required element, but I aced everything else.
that's really frustrating when you get one professor or whatever that just doesn't get it. And because they won't work with you, it just makes it that much more difficult where you can't do something. And especially if you want to. I've heard that mm-hmm. happening to so many people. Well, that's interesting. Now, you mentioned going to college and you mentioned going twice. Could you tell us a little bit about your college history? And then after going to two different colleges, what did you do? And I guess sort of what was your work history and how did you end up where you are today?
Okay. I was in preparing for this. I tried to remember dates of different things and my list got so extensive, but I, like I said, I was in the sighted world through high school, and then at 30 years after I graduated from high school, I went back to college, which was interesting with all the younger kids. And that's when I took ASL, and we can get into that in a bit, American Sign Language, and how I'm in the deaf world and the deaf blind world as much as I'm in the blind world. It's very interesting, and I'm loving where I am. And so I took American Sign Language 1 and 2 in the community college and some core courses, and then went to the local Christian school, Christian college. And that's where I took some biblical courses, and I took a lot of the other courses, and that's where I had the barrier with the psychology course. But I loved it. Then transportation, as you know, can sometimes be a problem. And I was crossing barriers between Clovis and Fresno. And, you know, to stay at Fresno Pacific University, I would have to take a taxi home from school every time. And it would be at night, some of the courses. And it was past the time that the small town's transit ran. Fresno's transit ran longer hours. But it was, that transportation was a barrier at the time. Sure. The other schooling I went to was in about 2008. I had been giving gifts to people. I like to create, and I would give people gifts of little scripture booklets that I created. I have a binding machine that can coil bind things, and I would write down scriptures and then my thoughts on them and how those scriptures affected my life. So I would make these booklets in different categories, like one on the peace of God and one on whatever. So I would just give them out, and people kept saying, "You need to sell these. You need to sell these." And so I thought about it. I thought, well, if I do, nobody would know about them unless there was some website or something. And I didn't know how to do that yet. So God has his own timing that's way better than mine. And he amazes me all the time. That very day in the mail came the course guide to the local adult school. And there it had all of the website developing courses in it. So I enrolled in those, and I learned HTML, PHP, CSS, which are the three main programming languages to make a nice website and interactive. And that instructor, he made his own course, and I remember needing to, or, wanting to, of course, to prepare ahead of time as a blind person. So I had my screen reader on a thumb drive, and I would go to school early and set that all up so I wasn't behind when class started. And the teacher called on me one time, and he said, "Okay, now what kind of a website are you developing?" And I told him, and I mentioned accessibility, of course, and he said to the class, "Well, you guys don't need to do that. I mean, you're not making websites for the blind." And so I tried to correct him and say, "Well, all websites should be accessible to all people." And he wasn't really understanding that. And then later I looked in his course that was provided, and he copied right from the WCAG, where it has the accessibility guidelines, and it explains what accessibility is and all of that. So he didn't even understand what was in his own course. So, but the students heard it. So that part was good.
Yeah.
So, but from there, go ahead, Kay.
No. Go ahead. You're doing great.
Well, from learning that, I came out as a master website developer because I took all the classes I could. But again, God's timing and God's planning is different than mine. And I never did make my, I played around and made websites for myself. I was a little timid with getting my business up online. And then a ministry came, I heard about this ministry that had, it was called, I'm trying to think of the name, ICC, Interactive Christian Community. And they had a lot of, on the schedule, they had a lot of programs where you can talk with each other, different subjects. And I ended up doing their schedule online and, made it a lot better than it was before and took all of the audio recordings and got Gold Wave and learned about audio editing and started editing their programs, cutting off the beginning, the end, and just cutting out the ums and ahs that I'm doing today and made a real nice product. and so I did that. So I got a lot of experience with that. And there was another ministry. I don't remember which one that was. Then I saw an ad for a volunteer webmaster for one of the blindness related organizations. And I thought, well, volunteer. And I thought, well, knowingly, I accepted it because I could get more experience and self, just being more confident in myself with it. And they were amazed at what I could do, to my surprise. And they said, do you know Drupal? And I said, not yet. And I just went home and learned it. And Drupal is a content management system that you put a website in to give it all of the tools you want. You have to know code real well, but you get more versatility out of your website. And so I did that. And then I was noticed by ACB. That one was CCLVI. It was the Council of Citizens with Low Vision International. And we did scholarship programs. I did the online form where they could upload all of their supporting documents. And that's probably when I was noticed that there was all that functionality that wasn't done before. And ACB was currently at that time where they were looking for somebody else because the person couldn't get on board with Drupal, and that's what they wanted. And so I applied, and I was doing that all the way up to the time where my life changed with now I'm serving my friends as a caregiver. And so I needed to give up that client because the hours were more, I needed to be on call in the hours that I might have to do the caregiving. So I gave up that client, but I did a lot of the, and I still do a lot of the ACB affiliates and a couple of other blindness related organizations that aren't affiliated with ACB, but they still do, like there's Sheriff Air in Nebraska. They do subsidized, back then it was taxi coupons. Now the share ride is included in that. So I guess I've done about 14 blindness related websites and others.
Wow. And so that's where you are today. That's really, I love that. I don't think there's any such thing as coincidences. And just as you pointed out, the things that are laid in your path that are just another step in whatever direction. And it's just neat how stuff like that happens, especially when you look back at it and you go, wow, that's pretty cool. Chip, if you want to take over from here,
I said,
I'm really enjoying this.
Oh, me too. It's really great stuff. So, Annette, thanks so much for sharing all that with us. It's really terrific. And then again, I can't express enough how fortunate we are to have you and the work that you've been able to do for us. And it's really been terrific. But you mentioned just moments ago about ASL. How did you get involved with ASL?
When I worked, I had moved to California in 2000, and I worked with the Independent Living Center as information referral specialist, and I built a program, a peer group for blind and low vision. And some of the clients had dual sensory loss, and all my clients always became friends. And I was asked to be on some access committees to help different places around the area become accessible. And so while I was working to make access for the blind, I was interacting with deaf and hard of hearing folks. So I was asked to be on a committee for the Billy Graham Crusade, and the team comes out 1 year ahead of an actual crusade at that time, and they set the foundation, get everything in place. So I was on that committee and met with the actual people, the team, you know, directly. So we're working on Braille and large print and all of those kinds of things. And my coworker is hard of hearing. She uses a hearing dog. And I noticed she was working with the deaf community to get access for the crusade. And they even had ball caps with the logo. But I knew she wasn't on the access team because the Billy Graham team, because, you know, I was on, at all the meetings. And I said, Lynn, I had her come to my desk and I said, why don't I put you in touch with Wanda, who is the head of the committee. And so that was the first time I facilitated with the speech with close vision for hard of hearing. And I got her on the team. And then all of the people from the deaf community, hard of hearing community, I got to meet. And that's where I saw all of the sign language. And they were teaching. They gave me a name sign, which is an honor. And so that's where I met everybody, or a lot of the main players in the community. And then at the actual event, I'm getting chills now, I got to meet the deafblind community, where they were in a small group very close so that they could really have that communication access that was needed. And I just loved it. So I started volunteering in 2001 or two with the deafblind community in the agency for the deaf. So yes, it was a challenge being vision impaired and being in a visual language, but the ones that knew me, you know, we would be close enough where the people just were so sweet. They started teaching me, and then I went to school for American Sign Language while I was, I still am an SSP, support service provider. That's someone that is not necessarily interpreter, not necessarily a guide, a sighted guide, but does everything for that individual, whether they're low vision or blind, or whether they're deaf or hard of hearing. It kind of facilitates them doing whatever they need to do. And so that's an SSP. So that's where I learned my language. And the tactile sign is a lot different than sign language, but it's good for me because of my vision loss. I don't have to, you know, not know they're even talking to me. I can be one-on-one with people. That kind of leads into the caregiving. While I've been volunteering, I started noticing unmet needs of some of the community members. And that's where God always uses me, is not if somebody has a need, but unmet needs. He's done that all my adult life. And my two friends that are married, David and Ann, they no longer had all of the support that they needed. And they're deafblind from different causes. But David was losing more of his vision. He's now he was born totally deaf and he's totally blind now. And he was still trying to go to the grocery store, and the cops would always, you know, drive him home when he would try to cross the street, and the drivers would honk, honk, honk their horns at him, and he wouldn't hear it, and he couldn't find his way back to that curb. And when I realized, I tried to get the hearing and sight at SSPs to fill in the blanks and assist with grocery shopping and things like that. And around the same time, I was also coming into the home and helping with their computers. So I became their computer tech. And I would see all their emails where all these people just wouldn't show up when they were supposed to come and help with their groceries repeatedly. And many people that didn't even seem like it was possible that many people could let you down. And then I thought, okay, I get it, God. I may be blind, but I'm able. So I would get on the bus, come to the house, take him to the grocery store, guide and interpret, and ride the bus back to their house, made sure they knew where they were, you know, put their groceries away, and then leave. And then that's when I started noticing health problems that weren't addressed. And then I would take them to the doctor, mainly Anne. She had heart problems. And I would always live in the hospital whenever she was in the hospital, so she would know what was happening to her. And through all of that, I happened to be, again, not a coincidence, happened to come to the house on a certain day where David had a lot of problems. And he didn't even tell Anne. He just doesn't complain. And I didn't feel right. I came back early in the morning. Another non-coincidence, I had just learned about Uber, and I did because, you know, the buses don't always get you where you want to go when you want to go. So I thought, well, let me try out this Uber thing. And I did a test run on a non-essential trip. And it was just days after that I came to the house. So I used the Uber to come back to his house, and I said, I'm going to bring you to the ER. And he said, okay. And that's what concerned me, that he so quickly said, okay. When I got to the hospital and they checked him out, they said he needs emergency surgery. So if God didn't put me there at that moment, he would have died. And so long story short, he was in there almost a month. 4 days after he went in, his wife fell and broke her hip, and I had them both in there. They both came out the same day, and I've lived here ever since. So that's what I was referring to before, where I needed to give up my larger client who I needed to be available. I didn't want to not be available when needed, when my friends' lives felt more important at that moment. So,
wow, what an incredible story. Yeah, that's terrific. I got to tell you, Annette, you and I do have something in common. I too worked at an independent living center here in Joplin, worked there for over 23 years. I know about information referrals. I did that for a number of years, and then I spent most of my time as the public policy advocate for the center, working with legislators on policy for individuals with disabilities. So that's kind of where I spent the majority of my time. And then also where you were talking about the SSP program in your state. Well, I'm the program specialist for the SSP program here in Missouri. I serve the Southwest Missouri area. There are four of us. And so I do the Southwest Missouri. So we do have that common interest there. So that's really fabulous. Don't have a whole lot of time left, so I'm going to turn it back to Kay. I know she's excited about asking her final question.
Okay. I ask this of everybody, Annette. So if you can think of something, this would be great. What is there about Annette that maybe only your closest friends know that people might find fascinating? It might be a hobby. It might be something you've done, a trip you've taken. Who knows? But is there anything you can think of off the top of your head that people might really find fascinating about Annette?
Totally not work related. When I went through the School for the Blind in Denver as an adult, we went whitewater rafting and I had a fear of water.
How'd that go for you? Oh, wow.
Well, I actually went twice. The first time I was terrified, and the second time I thought, why did I do this?
Cool. See, that's exactly what I mean. Who'd have known that? That's really cool. That's neat. I love learning different things about people like that, because that's exactly like you said. It's not work related. It's just something you did. And so that's great. Hey, I've really enjoyed this. It's just now maybe people have a better idea of the person behind the scenes doing our website. And maybe if they run into ideas or thoughts or whatever, they won't think twice about contacting Annette and finding out what she thinks. So, you know, it's really been fun talking with you. I've enjoyed it.
I've enjoyed this.
Annette, I do have one last question. I mentioned this to you before we started the recording. I would like for you, if you would be so kind, to share with us, with our listeners, some real positive, encouraging words. And I know that as you do so, you're going to really be speaking from your heart. So just feel free to share what's on your heart, some positive, encouraging words for our listeners.
I know that each one of you listening is an awesome person. You're wonderfully made, and you may not even know how wonderful you are. And I'd love you to be open to realizing, you know, as you talk about your life, that if somebody asks you about your life, you might not even take account of all the wonderful things you have done, interactions with people that maybe you didn't have to go out of your way, but you did. I just know that each one of you is inspiring to others. And I just want you to know your own value, how awesome you are, and keep listening to what your future might be. That might be something different, you know, as my life has turned into different things than I thought. So keep on kind of listening with your heart and just look inside and know how you're valued by other people. And don't listen to the negative around you. Just listen to the positive. And I just want you to know that.
Thank you so much, Annette, for sharing those positive, encouraging words. I know that it means a great deal to our listeners. So thank you so very much. And also, thank you so much for graciously consenting to be our guest today here on Meet the People of MCB. It's really been wonderful.
Thank you, Chip. Thank you, Kay.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you know someone that you would like for Kay and I to interview here on Meet the People of MCB, you can have them give me a call, Chip Haley, at 417-540-9703.
Or call Kay Malmquist, which, by the way, is me, at 608-436-2610.
You never know. You might hear yourself next time right here on Meet the People of MCB. Goodbye for now, everyone. Enjoy your week, and we'll catch you right back here next time. Bye-bye for now.